We still have a very serious humanitarian situation in South Sudan. We still have about 7.1 million people who are in need of some form of humanitarian assistance. We are now into the rainy season. This is the lean season for a lot of people, and that's the reason why the numbers remain as high as they do, even though, we've been in a period of relative calm since the signing of the peace agreement.
As you say, we're still in dire humanitarian need in the country, around 7.1 million people. This is a very huge number of people who are in need of humanitarian assistance. How do you reach these figures?
So this is reached. We developed these numbers through doing consolidated needs assessments. That would include the famous integrated phase classification, the IPC, that the Food and Agriculture Organization and World Food Program do with the government and others to try and estimate the number of people who are food insecure. But we're also complementing that with needs assessments in the water and sanitation, in health, in education, in other areas as well. So it's an accumulation of needs assessments. We are very careful to avoid the sort of double counting, but that's how we put it together.
Current figures put the internally displaced person at around 1.83 million people, and those that are displaced to the protection of civilian sites at 182,000. Other figures from UN OCHA indicates also about the South Sudanese refugees at 2.29 million, refugees in South Sudan around 297,000. And those who are severely food insecure in the country, that's between February and April, is around standing at 6.45 million. Now, malnourished women around 597,000, malnourished children around 860,000. This is huge number. How is UN OCHA and other humanitarian organizations responding to this their need for humanitarian help in the country?
No, thank you very much. I mean, we have a huge humanitarian effort that is going on here in the country. We have the UN agencies. We have more than 200 national and international NGOs who are involved. We receive the cooperation and the support of the government, for example, through the RRC, through the Ministry of Humanitarian Affairs. We also, from the SPLAIO, from their ROS, we receive support for that. So it takes a huge amount of effort. I mean, I'll highlight one interesting thing. I mean, we've been trying to pre-position food. The World Food Program has been in advance of the rainy season. I mean, they have pre-positioned almost 200,000 metric tons of food in 60 different locations. So that's the scale of the effort that's required to meet the needs of as many people as possible.
Yes, and as you did mention earlier, there's relative calm when it comes to like real confrontation between the forces or the warring forces in the country. But seems UN OCHA also has raised concerns when it comes to the issues that came out of communal violence, particularly in a place called Jur River, where 20 people have been displaced since early March, according to your reports. Explain for us particularly about these displacement of people due to intercommunal violence in Jur River.
Yeah, so that's actually, it's 20,000 people, as you say, since the beginning of March. And, the issues are, you correctly said, what we don't see now, since the peace agreement, we don't see, sort of direct conflict between the different parties. What we do see, though, is this increase in intercommunal violence. And a particular thing that we noticed this year is that cattle raiding, which has been a long time part of the society, that cattle raiding this year was more violent, and more people were affected, and more cattle appears to have been taken as well. So this year, that was something that we saw, and it has resulted in displacement. I think 4,000 people have also gone into the WOW, protection of civilian site because of that. So this, I think, we are concerned. It's like, although that the cattle rating is likely to diminish now that we're going into the rainy season. We're very concerned, you know, we wouldn't want this to be a pattern. So there needs to be a lot of work with the different communities and the different clans, the different groups, so that we don't see this kind of level of violence again next year.
Yes, and you mentioned, seems clearly the rainy season is a concern for the humanitarian work in the country. What's the biggest concern?
Well, the biggest concern, there are different concerns. One of the big concerns is just a logistics concern. In some areas, it becomes very difficult to reach people, to reach certain villages, to reach certain towns, certain communities. That's why we've done the pre-positioning with the World Food Program. You can also then have other issues. I know that you had the people from MSF on today talking about the increase in snake bite.
Absolutely.
So you have both the health concerns, you have the and you have the logistical concerns that make it just a more difficult time to operate.
And is there some special precautions that have been put, or something that, you know, measures that will be able to address these issues? Because you did mention clearly health concerns. There was an outbreak of, you know, measles and issues of cholera in South Sudan. You can't rule that out when it starts raining. Any other special operations to that?
No, I think, you know what, from history, what we're likely to experience. So you have to be prepared for that. And, you know, that is where we benefit from the fact that you do have a number of national NGOs, international NGOs, the Sudanese South Sudanese Red Cross, other actors who've been here, who know what's likely to happen. So they're able to put the preparedness measures in place for those things. And that's what's really important. You know you're going to have certain seasonal variations, and you have to prepare for that.
Yes. Now, with the signing of the Revitalized Peace Agreement last year, and of course, 8 months ended, more 6 months extended to the formation of the Transitional Government of National Unity, well, you acknowledge that fighting indeed has somehow reduced within this time. Has there been some improvement when it comes to humanitarian operations in the country?
Yeah.
Have there been some areas that you can reach that previously you cannot reach? And if this is happening, what other concerns do you have when it comes to the issues of operation, you know, humanitarian operations, basically, in the country?
Yeah. At this time, we can reach almost every part of South Sudan. And there are certain places where access has definitely expanded. I mean, I'm thinking Western Bahr El Ghazal, for example, going out of Wau, into Greater Bagari. That there have been clear gains there. There are a number of other places where access is just easier. We do still face a kind of a longer-term issue we've been dealing with, which is in some locations, some local officials can impose arbitrary taxes or fees, attempt to collect money, and that can make it a more difficult operating environment for the humanitarian agent. It can make some feel unwelcome. It can make them feel like it's a hostile environment. So, you know, I mean, NGOs pay taxes. Their staff pay taxes, and they do that through the central here in Juba. But, you know, in some places you'll see local officials trying to put in place local taxes as well. So those things, bureaucratic fees, landing fees, these things, they can create a difficult environment, because if a local official says, you need to pay me this, and an NGO says, well, I don't want to, then you've got a conflict.
Yes.
And, you know, that, if not well managed, that can get out of hand.
Yes, let's talk about the internally displaced peoples in the country. There's been recent calls from both the government and other partners asking for humanitarian, for the IDPs, internally displaced persons, to go back to their homes. In your assessment as humanitarian organizations or UN OCHA as such, is it time for the IDPs to go home? Are the conditions in place? Because even those displaced in Juba here, others have been complaining of their houses are still being occupied by some armed forces and other people. Is it time now to tell IDPs to go to their homes?
Right. So I want to make one thing very clear from the beginning. From the position of UN OCHA, from the position of the UN, from the position of the NGOs, we don't believe it is our role to say to an IDP, it's your turn to go home, or it's your time to go home. This is something that internally displaced people need to decide for themselves. And that's very clearly laid out in the guiding principles around internal displacement in the African Charter. So you can see that, you know, this is something that people have to decide for themselves. Mm-hmm. What we're trying to do is make sure that the conditions in areas of return are as good as possible, so that if people are looking at this, they want to know, you know, what are the conditions like? What is the health care? Is there education for my children? Is there clean water? What is the situation with my house? Mm-hmm. And what is the security situation? So they will want, and the UN helps and other NGOs help with this as well, to provide look-see visits. You know, sometimes people want to go, and members of the community want to go, and they want to see, and then come back and tell their fellow community members, well, this is what we saw, this is what it was like. So really, it's the decision rests with the internally displaced people, with that family. Our goal is to take advantage of the overall improvement in security to improve the level of service across the country. And then, you know, that's for people to make their decision from that point. Mm-hmm.
And now, have we seen more IDPs going back home? Is this happening?
It's a complicated story. That's one of the interesting things. I mean, you and I were just talking about the situation in Bahr al-Ghazal now because of these intercommunal violence, where we've seen an increase. We've also seen people leaving the old WOW POC site, which is now closed. The last couple hundred people left there. There are people who've been moving from here in Juba from the POC sites and going up to Western Upper Nile. We have other people in Upper Nile who've been moving as well in the last 2 weeks, going home, going to their original areas. So there's a lot of contradictory movements going on right now at this time. So I don't want to say, oh, there's an obvious trend. There are different movements going on in different places for different reasons.
Steve, before you go, some people have argued that humanitarian assistance are actually encouraging dependency. People don't have to cultivate for themselves because they know UNOCHA and other organizations will be there to help people to, you know, survive. What will you say when it comes to giving people humanitarian aids instead of helping people to help themselves?
You know, I think, I mean, my first comment on that really is that, I mean, I think, what do people want? People want to be at home with their family, with their community, taking care of themselves. So I believe that. That's what people want. What we are trying to do, and what we've always tried to do, is provide the necessary humanitarian assistance, the life-saving assistance that people need when they're in a very desperate situation, but also to help them recover and as quickly as possible. So a big thing that's going on right now is the distribution of seats and tools by FAO. You know, what is that about? That's about helping people to produce crops. Mm-hmm. It's about helping people to feed themselves, to feed their family, to feed their community. So I think we try to do those two things together. It's not just about, I'm giving you what you need for today, but it's also, you know, how do I help a family to get from now until the end of the rainy season when they can begin to harvest their crops? And then, you know, be able to feed the family and trade the surplus that they might have with others who can use it.
Steve, thank you so much for coming to Mirage Studios. Any final remarks?
Thank you very much, and I'm glad to have had this chance to talk about the humanitarian situation, and I certainly hope that it'll get better for people. We have a challenging year ahead, but I hope it's going to get better.